We've already seen that at Fort Donelson. It would happen at Vicksburg. It would happen, in effect, at Petersburg with Robert E. Lee's army later in the war. It would also happen in Atlanta. Well, here Johnston had run out of retreating room. He had to find some way to get at McClellan's army, or he would be inside Richmond, and it would look very dark indeed for the Confederacy. He thought he saw an opportunity late in May when McClellan placed his army in a position with about one-third of it south of the Chickahominy River and two-thirds of it north of the Chickahominy River. Hard to move reinforcements back and forth across a river. Johnston decided to hit the one-third of the army that was south of the Chickahominy River. He put together a plan, not a great plan, but the plan, such as it was not executed well by the Confederates on May 31st, and you ended up with a sort of bumbling battle at Fair Oaks or Seven Pines. Neither side won a decisive tactical victory, about 5,000 casualties on each side. So in that sense, it's not a very important battle. But it is an important battle in terms of its impact on later events. And there are two ways, especially, where it's important. The first, and less important of the two, concerns McClellan. I've already talked about how McClellan was reluctant, really, to commit himself to battle, to risk losing a big part of his precious Army of the Potomac. Well, that part of his personality was reinforced after the Battle of Seven Pines or Fair Oaks, because as he rode over the battlefield and saw the wreckage of his troops who had fought there, he shrank from that vision. He admitted to someone that he was upset by the mangled corpses, as he put it. And he added that victory has no charms for me when purchased at such cost. Well, now that's an admirable attitude. In one sense, he didn't like to see bodies that had been torn apart in combat. But in another sense, it spelled trouble for the North, because it meant that McClellan was going to be even more reluctant to commit his army to a major battle. It was a fatal flaw in him as a commander, because as much as he loved his army and as much as his troops loved him, he had to be willing at some point to risk them, and McClellan was simply not very willing to do that. So that's one outcome of this battle. By far the more important one was on the Confederate side, and that was that Joseph Johnston was wounded on May 31st, hit in the chest by a shell fragment from an artillery round. The Union soldier who pulled the lanyard on that artillery piece fired the worst shot of the war for the North, because that round that wounded Joseph Johnston opened the way for Jefferson Davis to put Robert E. Lee in command of the army defending Richmond, the army that Lee would call the Army of Northern Virginia. This brought to the fore the man who would become the greatest by far of the Confederate generals, and a man who, well before the war was over, would be the most important figure, political or civilian, in the Confederacy, and who would become the great rallying point for most Confederates. Lee was born into one of the oldest and most respected families in Virginia, or the United States for that matter. He had two ancestors who signed the Declaration of Independence. His father had been a major military figure during the War for Independence, had led cavalry very effectively. His father, Light Horse Harry Lee, had been governor of Virginia after the American Revolution. He's the man who gave the famous eulogy, Harry Lee was, for George Washington, where he called him first in war, first in peace, and first in the hearts of his countrymen. Lee could not have been better connected, both through his father and through his mother, who was tied into the great Carter clan in Virginia. But although he had this tremendous family tree to look back on, he didn't grow up in privileged circumstances, because his father was a terrible manager of money, took great risks, involved himself in all kinds of speculations, and in fact spent time in debtor's prison when Lee was a little boy. Harry Lee fled the United States when Lee was a little boy as well. He'd been disfigured in a riot in Baltimore, Maryland. He was a Federalist, and a Republican mob had disfigured his face, tried to cut off his nose. One of the people did poured hot candle wax in his eyes to see if he was still alive. So a really beaten, disfigured, and in many ways discredited Light Horse Harry Lee left the United States, left his son Robert to be reared by his mother, who was essentially an invalid. Lee grew up as in some ways the man of the house, that's how his mother spoke of him and thought of him, he went off to West Point, which was a free education after all, did very well there. He graduated second in his class, served in a number of engineering posts very well, very effectively in the 1830s and 1840s, compiled a dazzling record as a staff officer during the war with Mexico, convinced